the era of the jitterbug, running boards, zoot suits, and unforgettably, the big bands. Tonight on its July edition of A One-Night Stand with the Big Bands, we'll feature one of the era's most dynamic stars, Gene Krupa. This is Arnold Dean, and through an interview with our guest star and some of his famous recordings, we'll trace the career of Gene Krupa from its beginnings with the legendary Chicago Gang, through his associations with Red Nichols and Benny Goodman, and to the formation of his own highly successful orchestra. Tonight's program with Gene Krupa on A One-Night Stand with the Big Bands is brought to you by WTIC and by Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks, where you'll find low, low anniversary sale prices on new and used cars tomorrow through Saturday. Gene Krupa and the orchestra, and the theme, A Perksidy. A few months ago, we were interviewing George T. Simon, the most noted authority on the big band era. On the subject of tonight's guest on A One-Night Stand, Simon said, Gene Krupa is one of the greatest names and dynamic stars of that era, and also one of its most maligned individuals. It just isn't fair because he's one of the nicest and most cooperative people the big band era produced. You'll have the opportunity to see for yourself as we present Gene Krupa on A One-Night Stand with the Big Bands. Gene Krupa's alternate theme song, Starburst. Now you can have a beautiful new Chevrolet at a price almost too good to believe. It's Russo Chevrolet's second anniversary, and Russo is celebrating by offering tremendous savings on every new and used car in stock. You'll have four big days, tomorrow through Saturday, to choose just the model and color you've been looking for. but you'll want to go early for the best selection. Perhaps you'll choose the Caprice, the car that lets you enjoy the sumptuous surroundings of an expensive luxury car without spending nearly so much. Or what about the sleek, smooth-riding Bel Air? Been considering the Impala? It's easy to drive, exceptionally roomy and comfortable, with standard power front disc brakes, power steering, and automatic turbo hydromatic transmission. Or what about the Corvette? The list goes on and on. You can even choose from a full line of Chevrolet trucks. That's tomorrow through Saturday, the big anniversary sale at Russo. That's R-U-S-S-O, Russo Chevrolet. Take the Bradley exit from I-91, then the first exit to Russo Chevrolet, directly across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. One morning about a month ago, I found myself with some free time on my hands and nothing in the file for tonight's program. So I called Gene Krupa at his home in Yonkers, New York. His schedule was somewhat busier than mine, but he did manage to free an hour for us the following afternoon. He was waiting for us at the door of his home when we arrived, and ushered us into a very pleasant den to set up our recording equipment. Gene's is a pleasant home on a corner lot, just like thousands of other suburban homes. It reflects none of the flamboyance of the man who owns it. So it was in this setting that we began the interview by asking the legendary Gene Krupa how old he was when he first became a musician.
Well, I got my first drums when I was about 10 years old, and actually started to play professionally when I was about 11. And I'm 63 now, so I should have my gold watch by now, right?
You've had quite a bit of experience.
Yes.
Did you have some formalized training at the beginning?
Well, no. At the beginning, I was what you call a natural drummer, and I played according to the way I felt. But this time went on, and I got to play with some better musicians. I got to play with Red Nichols and his band in the pit, and I realized that now is the time for some formal training. And I'm glad I did take the time out to study. I'm still a more avid student than I am a player, actually.
Do you consider yourself...
See the practice pad right
yes,
there.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you consider yourself an unorthodox drummer in any way?
Well, I think anyone that has a modicum of ability has to be. Mm-hmm. In other words, Louis Belson, the innovator of the two bass drums, and Buddy Rich. And we're talking about natural drumming as of against studied drummers. Let's make a comparison there. I would call the greatest natural drummers that I've ever heard, Baby Dots, Buddy Rich, Ray Paduk, Ray McKinley, guys like that, as of against guys that studied quite a lot, like perhaps Louis Belson, myself, and guys like that.
You began to attract a lot of national attention, though, by the time 1927 rolled around with that great Chicago gang. When what a legendary group this was.
Yes, it was a tremendous group, and still is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Those of us that are left.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy McPartland, Eddie Condon. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, you played with them up in our neck of the woods up in Meriden a couple of years ago for the Connecticut Traditional Jazz
Fund. Yeah. As a matter of fact, not too long ago, there's a thing going on down here in New York at a place called the New School down in the village. And we did a show there. We had, we had Wild Bill, we had Eddie Condon, and we had Dick Wilson on piano and myself, and it was just a ball. It was great. It was. We were supposed to do like a symposium, but we got so interested in the music, by the time we got through playing, there was no time left to do any talking, so we just let it go at that.
The first recording I'd like to play, Gene, is one that you did in a recording session in 1927 with the McKenzie and Condon Orchestra, featuring Jimmy McPartland on cornet, Frank Teschmacher on clarinet.
Yes.
Gee, what a marvelous musician he was.
Oh, he was just great. I think that, I think he's certainly the greatest clarinetist I've ever heard in my life.
And for somebody that spent as much time with Goodman, this is really high praise.
Yes.
And he certainly
very,
deserved
it. Very great talent, Frank Teschmacher.
And the particular recording we're going to play not only featured Teschmacher, but also Bud Freeman on tenor sax.
And although still as great as he ever was.
That's for sure.
The world's greatest jazz band, he's still... You know, my conception of Bud Freeman is that he plays drums on tenor.
The rest of this gang was Joe Sullivan on piano, Eddie Condon on banjo, Jim Lanigan tuba, and, of course, Gene Krupa on drums. Do you remember this session, Gene? It was
very
December
well.
16th of 27.
I sure do. Well, I had to. It was the first record I ever made.
Let's listen to this recording of Liza. When I checked the liner notes that came along with that album, The Sounds of Old Chicago, Gene, the first thing it says about the Chicagoans is Krupa sounded wild, rambunctious. He sounded more so to the less accustomed ears of the late 20s. And you were really the innovator at that time. I understand you were the first one to make a record with a bass drum, as a matter of fact.
Yes, I guess that's true, but I can't quite be sure because I think Baby Dodds may have preceded me in that in that particular area. Baby, of course, was our idol. You know, my idols were Davy Tough, George Wetling, Baby Dot, Zootie Singleton, Tubby Hall, Johnny Wells. So you see, I had great teachers, you know.
Yeah.
While that isn't what you call formal study, at least it was a great jazz study for me, because all these guys are great artists.
That must have been a fantastic time and place to be playing in Chicago in the late 20s. Did you ever play for any of the gangster-owned restaurants?
Oh, yes, yes. Most all the nightclubs and dance halls and places to play were controlled by the element. You must realize that this was not the commercial music of the day. In order to sustain ourselves, we who thought like we thought music should be played, in order to eat, we'd have to work in the more commercial bands. And it seemed that the leaders of these commercial bands would never let more than one or two of us get in the same band for fear that we would upset things, don't you see? So the idea was we would play our commercial gig, and after the commercial gig, we'd meet down at these Three Deuces and have our sessions down there. And Chicago Theater was immediately across the street, and Paul White would come in with guys like Bix and Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey and all those, Bill Rank and all those fellas, and they'd come across between shows and or after the show and sit in on these jam sessions with us. Also, Benny Pollack's band was in town at the time, and he was trying to. He was about the only band you could say that that tried to play the real music and not in a commercial vein, and was quite successful at it. Of course, he had for an arranger Glenn Miller, he had Bud Livingston, he had Jimmy McPartland in the band, he had Benny Goodman in the band. A lot of great musicians.
Those are some marvelous memories. I'm sure you enjoy sharing them.
Yeah. And of course, great for a guy that wants to study.
Yes.
And don't you see, I see the same thing going on today. I know so many young drummers that are so very, very talented and study like crazy, study jazz, study all the old records and everything like that, and formal study too, legitimate study, but they're forced to play the kind of music that's currently popular today. They don't like it, but they do it, and then they, whenever they can, they play the kind of music they like to. Much the same situation we were in.
And I think you bear a lot of the responsibility for having made these memorable names, and names that we are all familiar with. Because before Gene Krupa came along, well, I'll give you an example. I understand that when you went to that first recording session of the Chicagoans, that you were working out in the studio with a full set of drums and so on, and one of the engineers listening in the other room came in and said, "What are you doing, building a house?" Is that a true story?
Yeah, sure. In other words, too much brushes, like Davy Tupp said.
But
don't you see, the recording equipment in those days wasn't geared to handle the sound, you know, and those guys were just worried about keeping the record technically perfect, you know what I mean, sound wise.
Yeah.
See, so the drum would upset all that more or less, I guess. I put in quite a few years with Red Nichols, and of course during those years, marvelous experience. I played with all the guys that used to be in Whiteman's band, with Bix, and of course with Hobie Carmichael, and with Louis Armstrong, and with both Dorseys and Glenn Miller and Bunny Berrigan, and just about all the great names in jazz, you see. They were all on Nichols' band at one time or another.
What a tremendous band that was. I've heard some of the old collector's items, 78s, right, that were just incredible.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite one, Gene, from that band?
Yeah, I used to kind of like, what was that thing, Teagarden on it.
You started right there, Jack Teagarden. What a base on which to build a band. And I have one particular favorite, Gene. Was recorded the day after I was born, as a matter of fact, July 2nd of 1930. It featured Jack Teagarden. His brother Charlie was with the band. Glenn Miller was there, Benny Goodman on clarinet, Babe Russin, Joe Sullivan, and, of course, Gene Krupa on drums. I bet you'll enjoy recalling this one with Red Nichols and the Five Pennies. Here's China Boy. Thank you. Red Nichols and the Five Pennies in a 1930 recording of China Boy. You're listening to A Salute to Gene Krupa, being brought to you on a one-night stand with the big bands by WTIC and by Russo Chevrolet and Windsor Locks, where you'll find low, low anniversary sale prices on new and used cars tomorrow through Saturday. Russo Chevrolet is celebrating its second anniversary, and you're getting a present. What is it? It's the opportunity to choose any car in Russo's huge inventory at tremendous savings. Yes, it's true. You can stop in any time, tomorrow through Saturday, and save on any new or used car in stock. Perhaps you'll want the sporty Camaro, or the economical Nova. Or what about the trim, richly appointed Chevelle, the Malibu, the popular Vega, or Monte Carlo, one of America's most popular luxury cars? You name it. Chances are Russo has it in stock, and you can get it this week at a low, low anniversary sale price. Remember the dates, tomorrow through Saturday, July 5th through the 8th. Anniversary sale days at Russo. That's R-U-S-S-O, Russo Chevrolet. Take the Bradley exit from I-91, then the first exit to Russo Chevrolet, directly across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. You're listening to a one-night stand with the big bands on 1080 Radio. This is WTIC in Hartford, Connecticut. After he'd left the Red Nichols band, Gene Krupa, like most other musicians of that period, did a whole lot of freelance work. And we're going to play a recording that's rather an historic event that he made with the Benny Goodman Band of November of 1933. Not only historic because it included the Teagarden brothers again, Artie Bernstein, Benny Goodman, and many others, but also because it featured the debut of a brand new young girl vocalist who was scared to death when they recorded, but was certainly to make musical history. Billie Holiday, singing an offbeat tune from Lou Leslie's Blackbirds of 1934 called Your Mother's Son-in-Law.
After
after that period then, after the Red Nichols era, was it 1935 for
Goodman? Around in there. No, well, after that I went on to bands like Mal Hallett, which was a good band.
Oh, yes.
From there I went to Buddy Rogers' band and left Buddy Rogers to join Benny Goodman in about 1934 or 35, somewhere in there.
The early years with the Goodman Band, of course, now, this wasn't your first experience with playing somebody who was not commercially accepted right at the beginning, and of course, Benny had his terrible difficulties.
Yes, we did. We were quite a success on the radio show, but then we tried to get out before the public. We laid a series of bombs right out to the West Coast, and we hit on the West Coast, and that was the beginning of it.
And even that one, I was reading one of the biographical articles about you where you said that night at the Palomar, where I guess things all of a sudden began to click into place.
Happened, yeah.
That you played the first couple of sets, and there again you were trying not to get the crowd aroused or anything like that. Keep them friendly as much as possible.
Right.
But then you suddenly kicked into something like King Porter Stomp and decided to heck with it, and from there on
it
was history. Porter Stomp. Was that one of your favorites with
the
Goodman Band?
Yes, it was. It's a great piece.
Gene, whenever we think about the Benny Goodman Band, I think we all focus in on 1938 and the Carnegie Hall concert.
Right.
When you first were approached about the idea, when Benny mentioned to you that he was thinking of a Carnegie Hall concert, what was your immediate reaction? Did you think it would go?
No, I was a little bit apprehensive, although by then, don't you see, the success of the band had been so great, the crowds are so big at the Pennsylvania Hotel, and the return to California was a tremendous success, and big success in Chicago. And then there was the theater part of it, the Paramount Theater, and the Camel Caravan radio show. So I knew it would be pretty well accepted, but I didn't know about how Carnegie Hall itself would accept it, you know. I guess the people that rented the hall out weren't too keen about it, because the nearest thing to jazz before that had been when Whiteman had played there.
Right. All of a sudden, the big moment came, and of course, the climax of it all was Sing, Sing, Sing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Now, there's another one. How many times have you played that over the years?
Oh, I'm still playing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a sort of a vehicle that you can make a new piece out of it almost every time you play it.
How was Sing, Sing, Sing put together, Gene?
Well, actually, it came in, it was a Jimmy Mundy arrangement, and it came in just as an ordinary three-chorus arrangement with Helen Ward supposing to do the vocal on the thing. But, I don't know, Jimmy had a four-bar introduction on the thing, and it sort of lent itself to tom-toms, I thought, and then it became a whole tom-tom thing. And for the first 4 or 5 months that we played, it was all drums, and then gradually I'd keep asking other guys to come in, single guys like Harry James or Ziggy Elman or someone like that. And then the guys started what they called sectional improvisation, where the whole section would improvise and try to come on. We've played that thing, you know, sometimes we play it for 10 minutes, and we've played it sometimes for an hour with the Goodman Band. And even now I enjoy playing it.
You don't know how that delights me to hear that, because very frequently something that's as successful and has been played as often, they think it's horrid to have to repeat it again. Mm-hmm. Do you think the Goodman Band ever sounded better than it did at Carnegie Hall that night? I think you were kind of tight at the beginning,
but they loosened up a little bit. I enjoyed it very much. I thought there was good stuff in there.
Thank you. The Triumph of Benny Goodman at Carnegie Hall in 1938, featuring Harry James and Gene Krupa and company with Sing, Sing, Sing. Now you can have a beautiful new Chevrolet at a price almost too good to believe. It's Russo Chevrolet's second anniversary, and Russo is celebrating by offering tremendous savings on every new and used car in stock. You'll have four big days, tomorrow through Saturday, to choose just the model and color you've been looking for. But you'll want to go early for the best selection. Perhaps you'll choose the Caprice, the car that lets you enjoy the sumptuous surroundings of an expensive luxury car without spending nearly so much. Or what about the sleek, smooth-riding Bel Air? Been considering the Impala? It's easy to drive, exceptionally roomy and comfortable, with standard power front disc brakes, power steering, and automatic turbo hydromatic transmission. Or what about the Corvette? The list goes on and on. You can even choose from a full line of Chevrolet trucks. That's tomorrow through Saturday, the big anniversary sale at Russo. That's R-U-S-S-O. Russo Chevrolet. Take the Bradley exit from I-91, then the first exit to Russo Chevrolet, directly across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. It's no secret, Gene, that Gene Krupa and Benny Goodman, after years and years of enjoying a fine musical relationship with one another, find their personal relationship beginning to deteriorate a bit. And as I understand it, ultimately one night you flared up at each other. One night, I guess, in Philadelphia, as
yeah,
I recall.
On the stage at the Aero Theater.
Yes.
Yeah.
What precipitated all that?
Well, I don't know. Agents began to get to me, and they said, wouldn't you rather own your own band? And I got to thinking, well, gee, I like the way Goodman runs things, but I'd like to run things my way, too. And there'd be tempo differences and things like that, you know. And I think... And working so hard and seeing each other so often, you know, we were together day and night. Uh-huh. Like there were times we'd be working the Palomar out in California, we'd be playing the Paramount Theater out there, we'd be doing a picture and a radio show at the same time. Well, you got away from the guys in the band for maybe 2 hours out of every 24 hours, you know. So, you know, tempers become strained. Sure. Just like anything else.
What was it like?
I have the utmost respect for Benny. I think even now I respect him more than I did then, and that was a lot, believe
and
me.
And he for you too, Gene, incidentally.
Well, I think so.
I think the Benny Goodman Quartet is kind of a favorite group. He had the trio, he did sextet things and quintet and so on, but the quartet...
The quartet had a great sound, and I think the the guys felt each other pretty well. Teddy Wilson's a pretty great artist, and so is Hampton, and so is the old man, and there you go. The guys had great continuity. They just seemed to be able to make good music.
Let's listen to a 1936 recording of that fabulous Benny Goodman Quartet. Here's Dinah. Thank you. so it's theme time again. This is a Perksidy, played by the Gene Krupa Band. There's so much to talk about with Gene, and so much great music from Krupa to play, that we're all out of time on tonight's one-night stand. But a month from now, we'll be back on Wednesday evening, August 9th, from 9:05 until 10, with the second and concluding portion of our one-night stand with the big bands featuring Gene Krupa. And we'll be talking then about his own phenomenally successful band, which starred, among others, Anita O'Day, Teddy Napoleon, Charlie Ventura, Roy Eldridge, and many others. And Gene also speaks freely and frankly about his use long ago of marijuana and how he feels in retrospect about that now. So we hope you'll join us Wednesday, August 9th at 9:05. Our program tonight was brought to you by WTIC and by Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks, where you'll find low, low anniversary sale prices on new and used cars tomorrow through Saturday. Production and editing of tonight's program by Brian Hartnett. Our location engineer was Ted Broussard. Studio engineering by Bob Schirrego and Dick Zwerko. This is Arnold Dean, and I hope you'll join us again Wednesday evening, August 9th at 9:05, for part two of a one-night stand with the big bands featuring Gene Krupa.